From KQED Public Radio, this is Forum. I'm Rachel Miro in for Michael Krasny. Today we talk to Mitch Altman, the co-founder of Noisebridge, a hackerspace here in San Francisco.
We all need community. We all need to express ourselves through our creativity. And hackerspaces bring these two powerful inner needs and desires out in the open where we can all explore that together.
Inventor, author, teacher, geek, and proud of it. Today, our first-person series dials into the headspace of Mitch Altman and finds galaxies swirling around in there. That's coming up on Forum right after this. Welcome to Forum. I'm Rachel Miro, in for Michael Krasny. About 5 years ago, 2007-2008, a computer security expert named Mitch Altman co-founded a warehouse of fun in San Francisco's Mission District. It's called Noisebridge, and Mitch Altman joins us today to explain to us how this space is designed to encourage grown-ups to play. Tell us about Noisebridge. What is it?
Well, Noisebridge is a place where anyone can come, anyone of any age, to explore and do what you love. And I think that's something we all really yearn for and are hungry for. So Noisebridge is a place where we have 5,200 square feet full of all sorts of tools that were donated and all sorts of way cool people teaching and learning and sharing what they love.
What kind of things are we talking about?
It's very diverse. I'm a hardware geek, really. So I teach people how to solder and make cool things with electronics. You know, even people who've never made anything. It's really fun to teach people and have a sense of accomplishment making something that maybe was even scary to them before. It doesn't need men in white coats. It can be anybody. And other people are doing things like that in their own realm. So we have industrial sewing machines. We've got a full kitchen. We've got a dark room for photography. We've got a machine shop. We've got a laser cutter and 3D printers. We have people sending up balloons into space and taking pictures of the planet. And there are people growing mushrooms. There are people brewing kombucha, a fermented beverage. And we have a scanning electron microscope so people can do science with that and with EEG for measuring brain waves and doing experiments on ourselves. And on and on and on. Anything people are interested in, people can set up there and start doing it.
So when we say hackerspace, we're really talking about a very expansive concept of what hacking means.
Yeah.
It's not just skinny guys in tight T-shirts, you know, trying to break into military computers.
No. That definition of hacker came about much later. The term hacker has been around since the 50s when a Model Railroad Club at MIT coined the term. And they hacked model railroads. Things you couldn't buy from corporations, as cool as many of those things were, they wanted to do things out of their own imaginations. So they were doing things that were unheard of in model railroads back then, and they called what they did hacking, and that referred to just making it work with what's available and then sharing it with other people, not only within their own club, but with other model railroad clubs around the world. And when they got their first computer, they went hog wild. And then it started getting more computery. But in recent years, it's been getting way diverse in all sorts of realms and not just computers. And, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, when computers were first starting to get popular, there were a lot of people exploring and trying to figure out, you know, well, how do these things work? And out of curiosity, some people noticed that they could actually break in to other people's computers. And it wasn't quite illegal, but it scared the hell out of a lot of people.
I can see why.
Yeah, well, of course. It can actually be dangerous. And a lot of these were like kids. They didn't even know what they were doing. Eventually, people started seeing they could make money doing this illicitly, and the term hacker was hung on these people when, you know, that's kind of unfortunate.
They kind of co-opted it.
Yeah, because, you know, those are criminals. Those aren't hackers.
Well, you know, I guess then hacking is what, a philosophy of approach to problem solving, a sense of adventure, a willingness to do collective jokes with others, you know, just in terms of the way you tackle a problem?
Yeah, it can be all of that. And there often is a mischievous kind of side to things, of playful jest. But it's you know, sort of serious silliness. We have fun. We're exploring what we love. There's really no barrier except your imagination. You know, that sets the limits, and imagination is really limitless. So, hacking can be anything. We can hack electronics. We can hack food. We can hack ourselves. We can hack society. And, you know, everyone has a different definition. So in my book, it's people who explore what they love as much as they can, learn as much as they can about it, improve it, and then share it with the world.
So NoiseBridge, how does it work? You have 100 members. Who are these people?
It's boys, girls, and transgender people, and all around. People who are like 3 come and play, people who are in their 70s come and play, and anything in between. People are mostly from the San Francisco Bay Area, mostly from San Francisco, but it's open to anybody. So when I started it with my friend Jake, we co-founded it, and quickly a whole bunch of people joined us to make it all happen. We're a bunch of people who enjoy being in a more anarchistic kind of environment where people self-organize to make stuff happen. So it attracts people who really love that kind of environment. And there are people who visit from all over the world.
Worth pointing out, as much as we love to celebrate ourselves here in the San Francisco Bay Area, that this is a worldwide movement.
It is, yeah. NoiseBridge is one of the early of the new wave of hacker spaces. Started after a presentation at this hacker conference in Berlin that happens every 4 years, an outdoor hacker conference. And they talked about how to start your own. And a bunch of us who were there knew when we got home we'd start our own hacker space in our hometown. And those few examples showed the world that it's not only a way cool idea, but that it actually works. And now there's hundreds and hundreds of these around the U.S. and the world. There's almost 1,000 of them now.
Wow, 1,000.
And growing
all the
time.
And this is just in the last few years.
Yeah, just since 2007. And, you know, we've been meeting every Tuesday since 2007. And we got our first space in 2008. We grew from a handful of people to like 30. And we had to go to, not in cafes to meet, but in a huge warehouse that someone had. And we're hungry for this. As a little teaser before said, I was saying earlier, that, you know, we need community. We really do. And we have so little of it in our world, so we're hungry for it. And we also need to express ourselves. And at Hackerspaces, there's a supportive community for creative expression through doing and making.
But it's interesting. You say we need community, and of course, most of our listeners think, well, I've got Facebook and, you know, I call mom every Tuesday night. What is it about being together in a physical space with other people that makes the experience of hacking different?
You know, the internet's great, and you know, and there's a community around this radio show too, and we can feel like we're part of something bigger than ourselves. We did evolve over a long period of time to support ourselves to survive in a sometimes hostile environment. We're not big and strong like Tyrannosaurus Rex, where we have big brains, and so together, collectively, we can figure out cool tools, cool ways of surviving and thriving, and we still have that. And we can do that through the internet, but you know it feels different to chat with someone by typing on a computer or even talking to a mic than being in the same room with someone. So you know, we could be doing this interview remotely, and that would work. But it's so much cooler when we're in the same room. We can see each other's expressions and little nuances, and one little turn of phrase just offhand can set your whole life in a new direction, perhaps. And when you have a whole community, a whole bunch of supportive people in a community doing that in one room, where someone's interested in electronics and someone else is interested in clothing and making cool fashions, then suddenly you see like these people, these guys who are holding soldering irons are going, wow, sewing actually is cool. What would happen if I
maybe
sewed?
The girls with the sewing kits are thinking, oh, look at that soldering
exactly
kit. I want to get my hands on that. We're talking now to Mitch Altman as part of our first person interview series. Do you have a question or comment about hackers or hacker spaces or NoiseBridge in particular? Maybe you're a hacker. You can join this discussion. Call us at 866-733-6786. 866-733-6786 or email us, forum@kqed.org, or you can post a question or comment on our website. We are checking it during the hour, so those questions do pop up in our conversation. All right, I have to ask a grown-up, very mature question, which is, how do you pay the rent?
I actually took a year off of working because I was kind of fed up with working in something that was just kind of cool. I made a living doing consulting most of my adult life, and I did lots of projects that were kind of cool, but none of them that made me jump up and down for joy at all.
Give us a couple examples.
Well, I helped develop virtual reality back in the 1980s.
That sounds pretty cool to me.
It wasn't like what I was yearning to do with my skills and my time. And a lot of cool stuff came from it, and a lot of stuff that I think is uncool as well. It's a powerful tool. People can use it for what they will, and I hope people will use it responsibly and make incredibly cool things with it. But, there are all these projects inside of me that were yearning to come out, and I took a year, an experiment on my life, to take a year doing only what I love. And it was kind of scary because I had no idea how I'd make money. So as it turns out, I could do a lot of volunteer work that I knew I loved, but I didn't know how I would make money with that, so I just kept doing what I love. No work came along that I loved, so I started working on my own projects, not thinking I'd make money with it, and this one got on a roll, which is a keychain that turns TVs off, that I call TV Be Gone, and I never expected to make money with it. But the interesting thing is, and it's not unlikely, if you love something, probably you're not the only one. And if enough people love it, then maybe they'll pay you a little bit to keep doing it. And that's what happened with TV Be Gone. Enough people like that project that I thought I'd make a bunch of them, and I sold them all in 3 weeks, and that's the only way I've been making money since 2004, is a project that I love that I made one for me. And that's what I encourage people to do in workshops as I travel all over the world, and ones that I do at NoiseBridge, and encourage people at NoiseBridge to explore what it might be like if you made a living doing what you love. You know, if you explore what you love, maybe you can make a living from it. It's possible. A lot of people are doing it now.
You must see so many interesting hacks, both at NoiseBridge in San Francisco and as you're traveling around the world. Can you name off one or two that just blew your mind?
Oh, wow. There's so many cool things. There's this conference I go to every year in Berlin, an annual one that's inside. And the first one I went to there had this stunning visual sort of an installation of colored lights. It was in the form of a cube. And it really was a very low-resolution, three-dimensional display in full color. And it was 8x8x8 array of these LED lights. And it was so beautiful. It was nothing earth-shattering as far as changing the world, but it changed my world because I knew I had to come back to this conference again after seeing that. And it inspired me to make a whole bunch of kits that were actually easy to make, unlike that, for other people to learn to make. And also at that same conference is this project that was just starting called Microcopter. And they used four computer fans on a little disc around 5 inches in diameter. And the fans could swivel in various directions, and it was all computer-controlled, and the fan's speed, I think, was computer-controlled as well. And you start it up, and it lifts off the ground and just hovers there. And it could fly around the room. And instantly, I thought, wow, what would it be like if you could put invisible emitters that TV remote controls use and then go up and down skyscrapers and turn TVs off? Just kind of how my mind works. But, that one blew me away, and that one's been worked on by a lot of people through the years, and it's gotten, through collaborative effort, an incredibly sophisticated, mature project.
I should point out, you are the only guest I've ever met who's actually blinking, or I should say it's the buttons you have on your jacket. There's an LED light on top of a robot that's going round in different colors. There's what looks like a little bit of a circuit board there, blinking red, and you've got a whole array here. And I got to warn you, it is radio, not television. Yeah. But is there something on this table that you've laid out that you just want to point people's attention to?
Yeah, well, there is a whole array. I've only brought a few, and most of them are visually stunning. But there's little things that are interactive for you wave your hand over me, you get waves of colors. There's one you wave back and forth, and you get an image like a heart or your message you program in. Here's one that
makes sound. Let's hear something that makes sound.
Yeah, this makes sound. It makes loud, squawky noises. And all of these are kits that anyone can make, it even if you've never made anything before. This is called a Tauri Punk Console. Not my project, but a project by my friend Jimmy Rogers. And it's sort of a theremin, if you've ever heard
That's
of that instrument.
Like, yeah. So I guess, you know, it leads to my next question, which is, have you ever seen any lame or stupid hacks, or do you just not believe in that as a concept?
Well, the only thing I would say is a hack that I would disapprove of is one that hurts other people, because anything can be used powerfully as a tool to do whatever you want. And if you're doing it unthinkingly, uncompassionately, you can hurt people or hurt people's feelings. And things like that, I would discourage people from doing, or at least think a lot about it before doing that. We all make our own choices. But really, you know, what is it that will make your life more fulfilling? You know, that's up to you and totally up to you to decide. So you might not know. So try some things. And if it turns out that it makes your life a little less fulfilling or the people's lives around you a little less fulfilling, maybe there's a different way to do that same thing or to try something new. So, you know, explore. It's really important for all of us to explore and not be limited to what we're supposed to do, but be limited only by our imaginations, which are limitless.
Well, we've got some people with limitless imaginations on the phone right now. Let's talk now to Harvey in Oakland.
Okay. Well, the first thing I think when I hear about this is where it is and how do I join it?
That's a good question.
Yeah, great. You know, NoiseBridge is open to everybody. We're a nonprofit organization. It's always free to come. Everyone is always welcome. If you like what you see, you can hang out for a while and ask to be a member. It's really that simple. But you don't need to be a member to do anything at NoiseBridge.
Does being a member cost?
So being a member, we came up with a structure which we hope works for everyone. It's $80 for regular membership, but since that's a lot of money for some people, we have a half of that, $40 a month for starving hacker rate. And you can choose month by month which you want to be, whatever you can afford to be a member. But since $40 is even a lot of money for some people, you can come to NoiseBridge and do whatever you want for free.
So I like the idea of starving hacker as in a starving artist. And yeah. And many people really are like artists, interested in manifesting a lot of creativity and childlike play in their lives.
Yeah, and we really are, many people do consider themselves artists. So whether or not they make things that other people would consider art or not, we are, through our creativity, expressing ourselves through what we love. And I will point out that NoiseBridge is at Mission Street, very near 18th Street, near the 16th Street BART.
Well, thank you so much for that question, Harvey. Let's go now to Cheryl in Berkeley. Hi, Cheryl.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Well, I just wanted to call in and say thank you to Mitch because I have a son who's only 11 and he has hacker genes. That's all I can really say about it. They didn't come from me. But when he discovered NoiseBridge, he started going over on BART all by himself and making stuff with people of all ages and working on projects that were he could never have been able to do at home. We don't have that kind of equipment. And he really found his tribe. It really created a community for a kid who is a proud geek and really got bullied and teased a lot in school and so on. And yet he went over to NoiseBridge and he found his people. So I really appreciate that.
Yeah, well, thanks. Thanks. I'm really glad we're there for your son. You know, that's really a lot of what it's all about. I also was brutally bullied when I was a little kid. I was beaten up pretty much daily. And, you know, I really wanted to be a part of what other people did, but, you know, it became scary after a while. But that's one of the things that made me know I wanted to start my own hackerspace when I got to my hometown back in 2007, was I felt at home for the first time in my life in a group of people not only did they not want to beat me up, but I was welcomed. And, you know, and of course, as an adult, there have been a lot of experiences where I've had groups of people that were friendly, but this is the first time where I felt at home. And you said, you know, found my tribe. You know, that was it. That's the feeling. And many people even cry when they find NoiseBridge for the first time, because it's the first time in their whole life where they really feel at home in a group. So I'm really glad that we're there for your son and for anyone who wants to check us out.
Do you think that is as true today as it was perhaps when you were first going to school, that people, they either don't respect science or they don't dig it, you know, they don't see it as cool?
Yeah, well, when I was a kid, being a geek, and I was born a geek too, it's totally in my genes. I couldn't pass otherwise. And so being a geek back then was definitely not okay. It was dangerous. And now it's almost sort of starting to be kind of cool, because people know that geeks are the people who've created the internet and created all these gadgets that we take for granted nowadays. So geeks don't have it as bad anymore. But still, bullies still exist. Even though it's explicitly illegal now, which it wasn't when I was a kid, it still exists. And teachers still just look on as it happens, which encourages bullies to keep doing what they're doing. So, but we can, you know, we can't do a whole lot about that, but we can do what we can. But what we can do is create other supportive communities where we are welcome and where we create opportunities for ourselves and others.
Do you find a lot of kids coming in to NoiseBridge, or is it just the occasional guy who's gotten the word?
Yeah, well, most people at NoiseBridge are 20s, 30s, 40s, you know, and then there's some 50s, 60s, 70s. But there's a bunch of kids. Some come in their lunch break, some come after school, middle school and high school. A lot of people come for events. Like every Monday, I do what I call Circuit Hacking Monday. And that's when I teach people how to solder, and other people come who don't know so much and they're looking for help. Other people who are experts come because it's more fun to do their projects with other people, and then they help other people. But a lot of times people come with their kids or their brother or niece or whatever.
I got to ask, why soldering?
Why soldering? Because it's there. I have to do it. It's what I love. And
but why teach it to people? Like this is your introductory presentation to people. Why?
You know, it's an incredibly useful tool. It's the basis of making anything with electronics. So these few things that I've brought over are just a few of the things that I can teach people to make. And all of them require soldering. And it's not just this. It's everything. Your telephone, your computer, anything that we use day to day that involves electronics uses soldering. And anyone can do it. Anyone can make these things. As scary as it might seem and ununderstandable, all you have to do is know how to solder, know what a few parts do, and you can make cool things yourself. And, you know, there's only so much time in a day, and not everyone can do everything. So we have to choose what we think is cool. But, you know, this is something I love, and I love sharing what I'm passionate about. And if there are people who pick up on that, then they can do it too.
Join the discussion. We know there are hackers out there with great projects. We want to hear about them. Give us a ring, 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can email your questions, forum@kqed.org, post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. I'm Rachel Miro, in for Michael Krasny. You're listening to Forum on KQED Public Radio. More with Mitch Altman in a moment. You're listening to Forum. I'm Rachel Miro, in for Michael Krasny. And we're talking to Mitch Altman as part of our first-person interview series. Mitch, tell us, when did you come to the San Francisco Bay Area?
1986. I was traveling around in a VW van doing sort of the hippie thing. I drove to Alaska, and I was slowly going down the coast, visited a friend here, and I really just got stuck here because I just loved it here.
What is it about this area, these people, that you know, transfixed you from the start?
You know, when I was a real little kid, doing the middle class family in a station wagon kind of thing, my parents stopped here. It was 1969, and we went to San Francisco in the Haight and Berkeley, and I just couldn't believe what was going on. This was not suburban Chicago where I was going to school. I just knew that I wanted to come back here, and it's just something about it drew me. Here's all these people doing not what they're supposed to do, but what they seem to want to do. They're sitting in circles and playing music of their own creation. They're doing art. They're doing experimental film. That just seemed exciting to me. And when I got here in 86, I saw much more of the same and saw that it was much, much, much more sophisticated than I ever imagined. And there's whole groups of people here getting together to do cool things, which, you know, happens everywhere. And it happens in Chicago, too, where I lived in Urbana, Illinois, where I went to school. But much more of it here. And it was so easy to make friends quickly, people who I'm still friends with. Unlike other big cities. So it just had all of that together. And, you know, and then I could key into these groups and add my own energy, whatever, to it and help it along. And I love putting my energy into things that I love like this. And so do a lot of other people here. So I think that's a lot of what attracts us here. And it's a place where it's not only tolerated, but celebrated to be yourself, whoever that is.
Let's go next to the phones because we've got a lot of those people who want to talk to you. Jaron, I take it you have some experience with Mitch from the past.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Mitch, it's Jaron.
Hey, Jaron.
Hey. Oh, it's so good to hear you on the radio. So, you know, this is so weird. So I started this little company that started Virtual Reality, and Mitch used to come around. Oh, man, it would be like 6 months in town and then 6 months just gone. And then he'd show up, and it was like the seasons turning, and we'd all have a little party. And just wonderful, brilliant hardware guy. And it's just such a pleasure to see you doing this.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. It's so funny, isn't it? It's also so funny. I mean, like, I think we were so young, you know, and it's just so strange to still be here. I don't know. So anyway, I guess I should ask a question. So my question for you, Mitch, is what do you think people will be hacking in 20 years? Somebody comes into the space in 20 years, what are they doing?
God, I don't even know how to answer that question. I hope they'll be doing things that I can't even think of now. Because, you know, technology is changing so fast. The realm of human knowledge is expanding so fast I hope that there's no way to know. You know, if someone from 20 years ago, 1990, could see that everyone has this incredibly powerful computer in their pocket, I mean, that's just amazing. You know, and the things we can do with it, positive and negative. Hopefully it'll be not just electronics and other realms of science and geekiness and food, but a whole new realm of science and geekiness that anyone can learn that doesn't seem scary to them anymore. So, you know, maybe photronics or I don't know, you know, and what people will be doing with themselves. Some of that kind of scares me a little bit, but there are a lot of people exploring what they can do with their body and interfacing with machines. There's probably going to be a lot more of that. But
biohacking.
Yeah, biohacking. You know, and I hope there will be a lot more of that because it should be in the hands of us people, citizens, rather than in just corporations that are doing it only for the money. If we're doing it because we love it, then it can go in all sorts of directions that actually benefit us.
Jaron, are you hacking for a paycheck, or is it something you do on the weekends?
Oh, me? Oh, I do both. I mean, you know, where I kind of came down with, you know, we tried to do this little startup company, and virtual reality was just too big a job for a little startup company. So we tried really hard, but we ended up getting, what happened? Sun bought it, then Oracle bought Sun.
And so, what was the company? What was the product?
It was called VPL, and we made the first virtual reality stuff. We made the, you know, the gloves and goggles and the software and all that stuff. I mean, way long ago, we made the first avatars.
Wow.
But more recently, you know, there's some stuff, I think you just need really big organizations to achieve some kinds of things. So recently, a great example is Kinect, the 3D camera from Microsoft Xbox. And so I helped get that thing going, working with a big corporation, probably something, you know, I never would have imagined myself doing, but I just don't see any other way to do something like that. You know, some jobs are just big, and it takes a lot of people kind of working together in a pretty tight formation to get it to happen. And I just don't think you can do it by any other structure I've seen. There are other kinds of things that don't need that at all. And, I think there's a lot of room for all kinds of things, for all kinds of scales of effort.
Yeah, I'd love to see corporations working with individuals and collaborative groups, like with Connect. Microsoft came up with that, and then maybe a little bit against their will, suddenly it became open source, and then they embraced it, which I commend them for. And now people are doing amazing things with this. So with this device that was intended to be part of their Xbox game device, people are using them for controlling robots and for input for all sorts of projects at hackerspaces and all over the world at schools and at people's homes. It's pretty cool, and there's a lot more room for all of that, and everyone benefits, including the corporation.
Well, let me ask, I mean, because so many people, when we say Silicon Valley or down in the South Bay, is San Francisco, do they have to drive to San Francisco to participate in a hackerspace? Are there other hackerspaces around the Bay Area you want to shout out to?
Yeah, so Hacker Dojo was started by friends of mine in Mountain View, and they have expanded tremendously since they started a little bit after NoiseBridge. And they're a very different feel than NoiseBridge, but they're way cool also. And then some people who helped start NoiseBridge started Ace Monster Toys in Oakland, and it's another cool space, also different than NoiseBridge, but also really cool. So there's way more room for more hackerspaces to be starting. And, if none of those hackerspaces are near enough to you or don't suit your fancy, start your own, because that's how it happens. People like you start hackerspaces. Like you. Yeah, you.
And are you pointing to Jaron when you say that as well?
Yeah, you know, everyone, anyone and everyone can start a hackerspace, and you're not alone. We have a whole network of people helping each other. Hackerspaces all help each other. We're not competing with each other in any way. At most, there's some friendly rivalry, I guess, but we really all help each other. And hackerspaces.org is sort of a clearinghouse for a repository of information and communication for hackerspaces to help one another.
Well, along those lines, Alberta writes in, sign me up. What a cool concept. What a positive community building idea. Alberta points out we're becoming increasingly isolated with technology, and this takes things in the other direction. That's a really good point. I mean, here we have these tools that are ostensibly designed to bring us closer together, but in a way they're also isolating us.
Yeah, they're very, very much isolating us. You know, television brings the world into our living rooms, and yet the more you watch TV, the less you're part of life.
Kind of sucks the life force out of the room.
Yeah, and then MP3 players can bring you all of your favorite music wherever you go all the time. It's really wonderful, and yet you have these things plugged in your ears wherever you go, and you're not interacting with people right next to you. And same with cell phones. We can call our friends and people all over the world, and yet we're not paying attention or interacting with people right next to us. So the promise of technology is always much, much greater than the reality. And unfortunately, that's because most of it is put out there with the primary goal of making profit. And there's nothing wrong with profit at all. We all have to make money in the society we choose to live in. But when the primary goal is profit, it's not there for anyone's actual benefit. Whereas if we're doing things that we love because we love it, whether or not it makes us money, then it actually is benefiting people.
But I'm going to challenge you there because, mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of creative people work on projects that don't actually resonate with anybody else. And I'm wondering, pop quiz here, if you can, point to a hack you've seen that really pulls other people in to enjoy whatever it is.
Well, just what I've been doing. People come in droves. These workshops I do, as one person, I can only teach about 50 at a time. But when I have a whole bunch of helpers, like at a maker fair, we can teach 3,500 people to solder in 2 days. And we run out, so people are disappointed. When we do what we love, like I said before, chances are a lot of other people are going to love it and benefit from it. And not only that, but we can make a living from it as well.
Phil here writes from Oakland. He's been involved with hacking since the early 1980s. He'll be moving to Bangalore, India for 2 years for his wife's work. And one of the first things he did was Google Hackerspace Bangalore. Sure enough, they have a hackerspace, the first one in India. I'm probably going to mangle the pronunciation here. It's called Jaga. And you can bet that you're going to find Phil hanging out there very shortly.
Oh, great. say hi for me.
And Patty from Berkeley asks, she wants to know if school groups are allowed to go on a field trip to Noisebridge.
Absolutely. You know, one of the primary goals that I had when I started Noisebridge with the people I started it with is education, because our education system, unfortunately, is broken in so many ways. People are not learning what they need to learn to live the lives they want to live. And that's really unfortunate, and I'm not sure what we can do to help that. But Noisebridge and other hackerspaces are places where we really can learn what we want to learn to live our lives. And, you know, it's unfortunate. There's a lot of times I've done workshops at schools, but almost all of them have been at private schools and not public because of all these liability and whatever issues with standardized tests that this doesn't lead to. But if there's a teacher out there who wants to bring their kids or suggest that their kids come to Noisebridge, please do. Everyone is welcome.
We're talking to Mitch Altman, inventor, geek, author, teacher, take your pick, and co-founder of the Noisebridge Hackerspace in San Francisco. Call us with your questions, 866-733-6786. Let's go now to Jeff in Oakland.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi, Jeff. What's your question?
So I heard about the TV off a couple years ago, and I thought that was brilliant. And I'm just wondering if there's any way to make the same kind of thing that would shut down subwoofers in cars.
Well, funny you should mention that. So the thing I make is TV Be Gone, by the way, and I am now working on something I call Boom Be Gone. Because so many people have requested, like yourself, that this obnoxious source be gone. So I've been working on it. It's challenging because the signal has to be incredibly powerful. I worked out one that I can turn off TVs that have, you know, the technology for remote control is basically the same whether it's stereos in a car or a TV. I worked out one that I can turn a TV off at 300 meters away, and yet that's not powerful enough to turn off car stereos. But I'm working on it. If I can turn off a TV at a half a kilometer, I can turn off car stereos.
Well, you know, that raises an interesting question, though. I mean, you mentioned I'm going to get to a concept called safety third in a moment. But, but you know, people will be familiar with safety first. And it seems to me if you were to turn off somebody, you know, driving the big booming stereo of a big car moving past you, that person would stop the car, get out and find you.
Well, probably not, because if you're
I mean, you have this, you know,
away,
orange hair, you know, you kind of stand out in a crowd.
I definitely stand out in a crowd. Yeah. But still, you know, if I go into a restaurant and there's a TV in the corner, even if its sound is off, and unfortunately, there's not just one, there's probably 12, and no one's watching it, and I just want to eat in peace, and I turn it off, even though I stand out in a crowd, people don't look at me and go, he did it.
It's the guy with the orange hair. What kind of reaction do you get? I mean, do people get angry? Do they fail to notice because they weren't watching the TV in the first place?
They fail to notice. It's noise. And like any noise, we tend to tune it out. And when it goes away, we're not even conscious that it went away. We just feel better.
Let's go now to another call. We've got Barb in San Mateo.
Oh, hi, Mitch.
Hi.
Hi. Oh, I can't wait to visit. What are your hours that you're open?
We are open 24/7. We never close. There's a buzzer down at the bottom of the gate, 2169 Mission Street. Just press the buzzer, and someone will let you in and give you a tour.
Oh, actually, my first question, though, was going to be how you came to call your hackerspace Noisebridge. I wondered what that meant to you.
Good question. So I co-founded Noisebridge initially with my friend Jake, and Jake came up with the term. It's a test equipment that used to be used for helping people fix radios. And this gets a little technical, but I'll try to be more layperson in my explanation. You inject noise into a radio, and noise is equal energy across a whole range, like a whole range of radio dial. And if you put equal energy across the whole radio dial, what comes out of the radio is not equal energy across the whole dial, but that gives you a lot of information about the system, and you can expect it to be a certain way, and if it comes out differently, then you know how to fix it. So anyways, by putting noise into a system and learning by it, about it, that we thought was a good metaphor of what a hackerspace could do for society.
Does that answer the question, Barb?
Yes. Interesting. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. All right. On to Rain in Oakland. Hi, Rain.
Oh, hello.
Did you have a question?
Yes. Hi. Actually, I wanted to... It's sort of a response to my turning on the radio and hearing your speaker. I don't normally play the radio this time of morning anymore. And so I wanted to say... I'm very excited because I have this identity with this mindset, with this disposition. When I was a very little girl, I sat at my father's knee soldering. I know how to solder.
You know how to solder. That's
fabulous.
Great.
Mm-hmm. I learned by playing with him because he had this little hobby of electronics. But then I didn't grow up and become a geek. That I'm not versed in technology, but I never had a TV. I never wanted to have a TV or watch a TV.
Congrats, you're one of the few.
No. And I don't drink coffee either, by the way. So I'm actually a different kind of a geek in the world, or a freak, really. But I wonder, I had this affinity for what I hear you saying. Is it appropriate for me to come to Hackers Camp?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're totally welcome to come. And by the way, you know, all of us are weirdos. Every single one of us. We can conform outwardly to behave like we're supposed to, but we're all weirdos. And so everyone, weirdos and people who conform, are welcome at NoiseBridge. So please come.
Thank you for your comment, Rain. You know, here's another one from the web. A person who loves NoiseBridge goes there every once in a while on Wednesdays for a group meeting called Sewing Crafts or Whatever.
Scow.
Scow. This person says it's a great group of people willing to learn, to share, and to create with each other.
Yeah, and that's really what it's about. You know, sharing, learning, creating, exploring.
You know, do you ever get people who have just gone so far from practicing play that they're just not ready to participate or participate collectively? Or are they self-selecting? By the time somebody walks in that buzz gate, they're ready for action.
Yeah, usually they're ready because otherwise they wouldn't have come. But, you know, NoiseBridge... Everyone's welcome at NoiseBridge, but it doesn't mean that NoiseBridge is for everybody. So, you know, once you walk in, it doesn't mean you have to come again. So, but if you like what you see, you're welcome to come as much as you like.
You mentioned Maker Faire before, and for anybody who hasn't been, I can't recommend it highly enough. I mean, it's like the Renaissance Faire, but for do-it-yourselfers, and which makes me think, you know, how does the hacking world intersect with the do-it-yourself world?
They're one and the same. There's no difference whatsoever except what you call it. The Maker Faire and hackerspaces they just go hand in hand. And hackerspace movement wouldn't have happened without Make Magazine and Maker Faire. And Make Magazine is a magazine about do-it-yourself projects. The same creators for both. And that showed people that they are not alone in their geeky endeavors or imaginative processes. And then out of that grew Maker Faire. And the first one had, 10,000-20,000 people, and it doubled pretty much every year. And now we're over 100,000 people that show up for these things. It's really amazing. And at everyone, I'm teaching people to solder, and other people are teaching people other things, and other people are showing off all these amazingly cool things that they make, whatever it is.
Let's go now to Tim in Loreese, California.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to tell you about a little idea I had. It's called The Goodbye, and it's based off of your TV, Be Gone, but it actually turns life support systems off.
Huh. That seems like not a very nice way to proceed in life.
I think Tim might have been making a joke. He's now off the line. But, you know, Let's go back to that idea of safety third. Mm-hmm. I was just compelled. I read about that online, and I'm wondering, what is that concept? Where does it come from?
Well, there's a hackerspace in Kansas City that has that as one of their mottos, and it was brought there from a robotics group that is part of what started that hackerspace. So, you know, safety really is important, but if it's our primary concern, which it has to be in some environments, but in the hacking scene and to explore, we need to take some risks. And life cannot be fulfilling without taking at least some risks. And how much risk you're willing to take is up to you. It's different for everybody, what you're comfortable with. You know, some stuff is dangerous. If you turn on a drill, there's a potential for hurting yourself, and you want to do what you can to make sure that you don't and that you don't hurt people around you. But there's a risk there. So consider it, but that's not your primary thought. Your primary thought is to make something incredibly cool while being safe.
I suppose it's also true, though, that there sometimes people, while they're thinking about having fun or making jokes for the benefit of their close peers, that they're not necessarily thinking about the consequences. Hey, we could do this. It's fun. And then, you know, somebody down the line is suffering because of something that wasn't meant to be damaging, but is.
Well, yeah. And that's the case with whenever anyone creates any tool. You know, I'm sure there have been people who've been killed by hammers out of malice or anger. That certainly wasn't the intent of hammer makers, but these things happen. But if we think about the responsibility, you know, for people who create, we have a responsibility for what we create. And if we think about that and create a context for it, for what we believe is good and what we love, then that is the best we can do.
One person here on the web, Adam in Berkeley, do the products of hacking always have to have a specific function? Is there any virtue or value to machines and or software that don't serve a specific purpose?
Well, absolutely. I mean, what is the purpose of art? I mean, we need art. Most people would agree upon that life would be kind of sterile without it. But what is the function? So, you know, when you explore what you love, you do it because you love it, not because it has a particular function that it's going to help people. It can. I mean, that might be part of what you love, but it doesn't need to. It's up to you.
What's the last hack you can think of that just impressed you just for sheer beauty?
Oh, there's so many of those. But the one that comes to mind instantly isn't necessarily the last one. But in Japan, there's a hackerspace called Anchor Labs. And they created this Rube Goldberg machine. And Rube Goldberg was from like the 50s. I'm not even sure. He created these contraptions that don't really perform any function at all. They just, one thing happens which causes another thing and another thing and another thing and another thing. And these people created their own version of that with computer monitors and rolls of toilet paper and sewing machines and light bulbs and sensors all over the place. And it goes on and on and on. And they call it the Way Sensing Go, which is a very Japanese kind of a name. Look that up on YouTube. You'll find it. I just think it's awesome. It's pointless and beautiful.
We've got another comment here from, or a question rather, from Adam in Berkeley. Do you view NoiseBridge and other similar hacker spaces as spiritual predecessors to the hacking of Steve Jobs? Did Mr. Jobs influence your idea of hacking at all?
Only in a negative way. Because I'm actually not a fan of Mr. Jobs. He was a brilliant marketing person, and I'm not a fan of brilliant marketing. Advertising has its place. If you're making something really cool and you want to let people know about it, let people know about it. That's advertising. That's fantastic. But when you manipulate people into buying what they don't want or need, I don't think that serves society well.
Although I'm going to stand in here and challenge you on this one. I mean, I have an iPhone and I love it. And I love the form it's given. And I know Apple's making a hefty profit, but I love the form it provides. You consider apps. Anybody with a brilliant idea can toss it up on that app marketplace, and suddenly we're all, I don't know, lobbing birds at pigs or doing something really helpful, like finding a parking space or checking out when the next BART train is coming. I mean, there's so much creativity happening.
Sure. I have nothing against all of that or the profit that Apple's making. They're just charging a lot more for their hardware, and a lot of their hardware is actually inferior. But they market so well that people get defensive when you say things like that, which is why I like saying it. So anyways, Steve Jobs didn't come up with any of these ideas on his own, and he actually killed a lot of innovation because of his top-down approach of control freakedness.
But this is also the nature of companies. They, you know, they're looking for that, you know, what will make profit, and the rest gets shaved to the sides. It's kind of the way that form of capitalism works.
Yeah, and you know, and we can choose to be a part of it as much as we like or not. So, you know, make your choices.
Well, with that, let's go now to Steve. Steve, good morning.
Hi, yeah. I'm in Sacramento, and I had a question about cell phones. You know, we're inundated with cell phone users in the movie theaters, restaurants, and even schools where students often have cell phones. I'm wondering, how does this apply to them?
Cell phone be gone. I think Steve is trying to give you your next assignment.
Yeah, okay. So I get a lot of requests for cell phone be gone. The thing is, it's really easy, and it's also totally illegal. It's illegal to have one, to use one, to sell one, to buy one. There's this place called Deal Extreme, however, DealExtreme.com, where you can actually buy one delivered for $44. It is illegal, so I wouldn't encourage anyone to break the law. But there's also Wave Bubble. Lady Ada, who is actually on the cover of Wired magazine in April, the first woman engineer ever to be on the cover of Wired, and it's about damn time as far as I'm concerned. But she came up with the best cell phone jammer, and it's called Wave Bubble. It's not illegal to have the plans online, but it is illegal to make one.
Well, that seems like a very good point to come out of this conversation. Mitch Altman, co-founder of Noisebridge Hackerspace in San Francisco, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
He's been talking to us as part of our first-person interview series. If you've got a proposal you'd like to put forward, email us, forum@kqed.org. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Kevin Guillory. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Forum's executive producer is Raul Ramirez. Our engineer today is Danny Bringer. You can continue the conversation online at kqed.org/forum. I'm Rachel Miro, in for Michael Krasny. Have a great weekend.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.